And thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Huge welcome to any visitors with us this evening. Not been to this meeting before, welcome, we're glad you're here. Massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back, so welcome. So we are a speaker meeting, and it does fall on me tonight to introduce our speaker. This gentleman's been around our fellowship for a while. He celebrated a fairly significant milestone in his recovery at the end of last month, actually, which would have been March. He's let that slip by. I didn't spot that. So I've invited him to come along and share with us tonight. He's been coming to our meetings for a while, taking an active role in service, and has just stepped up as the chair of our area. I'm going to let you know that, and I thought it would be fun to let him come and share with us tonight, so kind of meet and greet us, let us know who he is. So without any further ado, Tony, please share with us for 40 or 45 minutes your experience, strength and hope, journey to, into and through Narcotics Anonymous. The floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you, Steve, and my name's Tony, I'm an addict.
Hello, Tony.
Tony.
Hi, Tony.
First and foremost, love and hugs to everyone, yeah? You know, because that's what I feel in these rooms. You know, I feel the love, you know, and the unity. And as my sponsors here, Jim B, I'm really grateful that he's managed to get through his recent hospital visit, shall we say. Because if it weren't for that man, really, then there's a lot of things that I wouldn't have been able to accept, that I've been slowly been able to deal with over the last few years. But we'll get to that. I'll tell you a bit about myself. I'm 63 now. I was born in late 50s, 59. My father was in the army. My dad had me, I think it was in his first year of marriage to my mother. Consequently, I became the eldest of six. Unfortunately, by the age of five, I'd already lost a brother and a sister through illnesses and stuff. My parents divorced at an early age. I was six when my parents divorced. And when I was seven, I was introduced to my stepmother, who was only 9 years my senior. So she was a 16-year-old, I was a seven-year-old, not wanting to take on board anything she had to say. So I was very rebellious through my childhood. And things happened during my childhood which I thought I'd take to the grave. You know, I come from a Scottish background. I was born in Glasgow, and whiskey for us was a norm. But as a child, it was a way to knock your kids out to get some peace and quiet. I think that's where that came from. But it wasn't really until I drank on, used to nick, you know, wine and stuff like that at parties and stuff like that. And it wasn't up until I was around about 12 years of age. My dad, now no longer in the army, he was a lorry driver. And he delivered grain spirit, which is unpurified, what they do, it's called grain spirit, and basically they add distilled water to it to bring it down to sellable volume, I think, which was 68 or whatever it is. And the first time I drank that, I was 12. And subsequently, what I found is it took away my pains. I became literally overnight, I became like the happy-go-lucky child in the playground. But very quickly it was noted that I was coming to school smelling of alcohol, and very quickly, within a three-month period, I was thrown out of school for being drunk and disorderly. And that's really when the shit hit the fan, really, because basically I was drinking on a daily basis, and my dad literally had hundreds of gallons and of this grain spirit. It was like ridiculous, you know. So it's so sad, in our house at that time we couldn't even use the bath because my dad had filled it with Ember Cream sherry. And I can remember when the bath was actually emptied out, it was like pink, a tide mark around the bath, and the rest of the bath was pink thereafter. But unfortunately I got into a lot of trouble. I hang out with guys that were like 18 and 19. I was 12, coming up for 13. And before very long, I was arrested and sent to a naughty boys' school. And I was 13 and a half when I went to that naughty boys' school. And it progressed to the point where I ended up in Borstal, and I learned about other things that could take your mind off what was the reality of what my life was like. I learned about opiates whilst I was in Borstal. I learned about cough medicines and all different sorts of things that would basically get you high. I came out of prison literally about 4 days before my 16th birthday, and very quickly got involved in a relationship with my ex-wife, and I thought it would be, if I hooked onto this girl and put all my energy into this girl, maybe I'll be able to stop drinking and using. And that wasn't the way forward. Unfortunately, I got pregnant. I'm now 18. I'm out drinking every night, working every day, in the pub, you know, for tea break, lunch break. I worked on a building site, so people didn't worry about you too much on a big building site. You could go and disappear for an hour or two. And my life was basically in the pub most of the time. And I got married and divorced very quickly, because obviously I was not able to stop drinking or using, and I was not able to be an upstanding citizen in society. I don't really want to talk about all the madness too much, but in reality, I'm going to move it forward. The reality is that I was divorced. I was one of these addicts that could work right under the influence and just top up highly every night. Yeah, and then wake up in the morning and just get on with it. Yeah. And there's in the building industry, it was quite easy to hide yourself. You know, I lived in Essex, that's where my dad was demobbed, and so London was like very easy to get work in, on these big sites in London, and you could go missing for weeks and you'd be in the bar just drinking and doing a lot of amphet back then. And basically, by the time I was 20, I was now divorced, and basically I wanted to try and do some journeying, shall we say. And I decided that I was going to go over to Germany and I was going to make all my money and everything's going to be okay. The reality is I took myself with me. And I was paralytic pissed on the ferry. I can't remember much of actually getting over to Germany, but I ended up in this pub called the Mayflower in Cologne. Köln, they call it over there, but with the British name is Cologne. And I started working there on a daily basis and drinking and using, you could, in Germany, you could get this liquid speed. It was called Y900 Svantik, which means X120. And I sort of took a shine to this stuff and mad for it, basically. Spent 6 months on that. I was like kind of my 21st, but wasn't really involved with any one person. And I decided to go to Spain. Think, oh yeah, nice sunny, go there, having a nice time. I went there with another guy and two girls. Literally was just off the face all the time. It was like madness. I can remember I was in Benidorm, and I'd earned quite a lot of money in Germany, even though I was drinking 24/7. I earned quite a lot of money. It was very cheap in Germany. And now I'm in Spain, and actually it's very cheap in Spain. And I basically just drank and used, smoked weed. It was back, most of the time it's solid actually back then, but not really into, you know, I hadn't got into the heavy duty stuff by that time. I came back to England. I was now 21 and a half, 22, something like that. I've been still in the building industry, just doing labouring jobs. You know, I couldn't do much more than that. And I could hide myself, you know, I could hide on these big jobs and, you know, go missing and still get a wage at the end of the week. You know, because I needed to get the wage of the wage of the week because I had too many bar bills to pay. Yeah, so I was just covering my ass all the time, chasing. And unfortunately, I got into a few situations when I come back to England, and I ended up in prison again. I think I've done an 18 months, something like that. You learn that one of the best places to work in a prison is in the kitchen. Because in the kitchen you can steal cheese and ham and bits and pieces, and you can buy what you want. You've on the floor, you know, on the wing, you can just buy anything you wanted. So it was another survival technique. And all the time, I felt as if I didn't have a care in the world, really. And I came out of prison, I got involved with a woman, Roz. That was another thing. I thought by having a relationship, everything would be hunky dory, and I'll sort myself out. And nah, that didn't work at all. 3 years later, another child, and I'm just as mad as anything. So I'm now 27 years old. I get involved in a situation, and I end up in prison yet again. This is now, I'm doing a 3.5 year sentence. And it's the same old thing, you know. I'm all right, Jack. Now, I've got whatever I need to keep me, what I thought, stable, normal. I'm out of that prison sentence. And by this time, I'll be 30-ish, something like that. Haven't even been, you know, I haven't even seen my kids. Haven't even seen, you know, their mothers, just totally abandoned them. I then got heavily into the rave scene. That's where the money was. Started doing lots of coke. I tried gear for a while. Didn't really sit with me. I actually had to segregate myself for 6 months to come off the gear, and I weaned myself off with vodka and amphets. By this time, and say I was about 33, and my ex-wife contacted me. Well, actually, she contacted a friend. By this time, I'm living in a squat in Southend-on-Sea, and I have several other people, and we're just doing mad stuff, you know, selling ease, weed, whatever we could sell, sold it, yeah, and literally just partied constantly all the time. And I can remember a friend of mine saying, oh, your missus has come to see you, Tony. I said, and literally it sort of hooked in for about half a second, and then I forgot it. And then a couple of weeks later, on a Saturday morning, a friend woke me up and said, your missus is on the door. And she'd come along, she'd remarried, etc., etc., but she was divorced now, and she just wanted me to meet my son, basically. He was now 12 years of age. That was 25th of May, 93. And I thought, this is my get out, or jail free card, this is. I'll hook up with her, I'll go down to Torquay, I'll make a new life, and I've got a coke habit now. I'm drinking one and a half bottles of vodka a day, and my head's going, yeah, I'll be all right. But anyway, I go down to Torquay, same old, basically. You know, once you've learned where to get drink and drugs, you can just see it a mile off. You know, once, you know, I've shoplifted, you learn shoplifting, it's like you can see the shoplifter a mile off. You know, you can see all of it. And so, you know, it's a survival techniques, I would say. Now, the reality was that was 93, and it wasn't very long before I was back in front of the courts again. And I ended up with a 6 months imprisonment for assaulting the police. And that was Christmas of 93, was when I was true, you know, I had a court thing when I was 18 years old to attend AA, but I didn't do that. I went to the meeting and walked out. That weren't for me. Oh, anyway, I'm working in the kitchen in Exeter Prison, and I go back to my cell, which I had on my own at this time. And there was a guy, a new guy, and he had all this literature stuck up on my walls. And I'm like, what the fuck are you? Wait, who the hell do you think you are? Little desire to know that he was possibly my saving grace, because he was he'd been clean for a couple of years and relapsed and got himself in trouble and ended up in there for 3 months, and spoke about different things and realized that there were some similarities, and he gave me all this information about a treatment center based in Plymouth. And basically we made a pact that he wouldn't use for the last 10 days of my sentence. And it was the 9th of February, and I stopped, and for 10 days, and it was real bad. You mean, you're in much... A silly little cell, both of you, both being sick as pigs. Oh dearest, oh madness! It was absolute madness. But the first time that in reality that I'd been free of a drink or a drug, and I had all these grand ideas on the 19th that I'd get out of prison and disappear. I'll be a new man. I remember getting out of the prison. I went to the phone box. I phoned this treatment centre up. They said, very good, Tony. We'll, you know, call us on Wednesday. And that was it. I was bang out here again, straight into the pub. And obviously didn't phone the treatment centre up. And literally, I was just far worse than I'd ever been. I caused so much trouble for my ex-wife and her family, and there I was again in a prison cell. Yeah, in Torquay police station, and they gave me the option. You know, you can go into treatment. We know you've contacted these people. So anyway, I get into treatment. I go to treatment on the 23rd of March, which was 1 month exactly after my belly button birthday. That's when I started my journey, really. 23rd of March, 94. I remember my ex-wife, letting me out of the car, and it was like the very first time I went to school. You know, it's like I just literally felt so vulnerable, like a little kid, you know, going into this place. I remember going in and I walked up to the main desk, and the woman said to me, "Oh, you must be Anthony Lane." And I said, "No, everyone calls me Tone." Yeah, straight away. What an idiot. Yeah. I thought I was God's gift. What an idiot. Oh, we're gonna put you on I'm not an addict. I just have a drink now and again. So consequently, they didn't put me on a detox program. And you know, the first 15 days I was running up the walls. And I can remember on the 15th night, I had this out-of-body experience. and the thing that was seeing in the darkness, and in the darkness I heard this voice, and it was saying, take hold of my hand, I will lead you to the light. And I can remember this vividly, and all of a sudden I feel as if I'm levitating above the bed, and I'm in a room with six other guys. This one guy, Ben, his name, was over in the corner. He'd swung his legs round and his bread, and he was rubbing his eyes. But I could see him, and I automatically became fearful. However, prior to that, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, however long it was like it was such calmness. It was like I'd free of everything. I didn't ache. I didn't feel no anger. I didn't feel any. I didn't feel bad. Anyway, I went back into my body and I ran to the nurse's station, and I asked for some drugs. And they said, "No, Tony, you're okay. Been there for 15 days. I've not had anything. You're doing okay. You'll be all right. We'll give you some acupuncture." Anyway, so that was the start of that journey. You know, I stayed in treatment for 9 months. You know, there was times during that process, you know, the thing was step one. My life was unmanageable. And I'd started to break the denial. Obsessive thinking had slowed down. I hadn't quite got to grips with God, the understanding of God, but I got to grips with a higher power, in the sense that the people around me in my group, they were my higher power. I remember that I decided that things that happened in my childhood, that I'd bite the bullet and speak with my counsellor about this. The things that happened, the things that I was full of shame about, anger, and power, not just anger, rage. And I can remember saying to this counsellor, and he said, "Tony, you can't share this stuff here. You can't share that stuff in the group. You can't do that. You'll be ostracised." And I said, "What do you mean ostracised?" He said, they will separate themselves from you. You can't be doing this." And in reality, you know, I just kept my self, sort of like hidden in a way. The rest of the time I was in treatment, and I vowed that I'd never ever share that stuff to anyone. First sponsor I had coming out of treatment, he was a really nice guy, but unfortunately found out that he had leukemia about 6 weeks into our journey, and it wasn't very long before he actually relapsed. Really sad to say. And then I got myself involved with another sponsor who was AA based. Because back in them days, it's quite hard to actually get NA sponsors where I was living now in Torquay. And I can remember, you know, Michael, his name was, really nice guy. He was Cornish Seaboy. Steps one, two, and three in an hour and a half in the afternoon, and that's the way it is. It's just this is how quick get through the steps, and it was like 3 months, all drill, the stamps done, dusted, you're all right, everything's cool, dandy, you know, doing service, you know, having barbecues and all this stuff. And then unfortunately, he became ill. I then moved on to another sponsor. I'm going to run through things quite quickly now, because basically, I'm now out of treatment. I've got a sponsor. I'm working the steps. I'm trying to keep my head above water. I'm now in a new relationship with my ex-wife, with my son, and basically, I get a job. And I get this job because I needed to get a job, because I needed to earn money, because I needed to look after my family. I needed to be part of that. I needed to be part of society. And anyway, I got offered this job, and it was working away from home. And little did I know that I'd be putting pub signs up on pubs outside signage. Oh, dearie me, what a laugh. That's where I learned to be an electrician, basically. And I can remember the very first morning that I worked somewhere in Leeds, and I live in Torquay, and I travelled all the way up to Leeds, and I'm new on the job, and the guy's explaining to me what I need to do when I get there, so we're all primed and everything. I get there and I have to go in, you know, explain myself to the manager what we're going to do and why we're going to do it and how's it going to be done. And I went into this pub and I was shaking, because I hadn't been in a pub since I've been clean. And I was like 10 months, 11 months clean at this time. And basically, all I noticed was all the people sitting in the dark side of the pub. And I thought, oh man, I remember. Oh, it's horrific. I don't really want to be here. I don't really want to be here. However, I've got a job to do. So I have to get over this. And in reality, that job served me very well, because you know, I kept clean, I began being responsible, I got a mortgage on a house, you know, I then decided to go to college, I'm now going to learn to be an electrician, this is going to be the job that's going to feed my wife and my kids, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to meetings all around the country, I'm doing service, you know, area, and over the years, you know, and very quickly, I was very, very fortunate. And this is something that I would never have, you know, if someone had said to me, Tony, in 4 years' time, you're going to be a respected member of a company, and you're going to have people in your life that respect you. I thought, I would have told him, you're having a laugh, mate. You are having a laugh. Oh, anyway, I became a contracts manager of a big English fire alarm company. You know, servicing places like TK Maxx, which is TJ Maxx in America, you know, Primark, McDonald's, blah, blah, blah. And I'm a contracts manager. I'm a six-figure salary, near enough. And I'm like, how did I get here? How I got there was because people actually trusted me. People trusted me in the fellowship. They helped me to actually become Tony. And I'm really, really grateful for that. I've been very fortunate in my recovery that I've managed to, you know, go to Australia. Don't get me wrong, I have had ups and downs like everyone, but the one thing is that I've not felt the need to pick up. It took a long time, and I'll be straight with you guys, you know, there were still times during my recovery, I think for the last sort of couple of years, the last 2 years mainly, it's been okay. I haven't had any thoughts of drinking or using, you know, because a lot's happened in my recovery. You know, I went to university. I mean, I was like 42 when I went to Houston, you know, no, I think I was actually older than that. I think I was about 45 when I went to university. It's like, yeah, you know, I was 28 years clean last month. I was, and I'm like, how the hell did I get here? I got here because you guys helped me get here. This program helps me to be the person I am today. Now, I don't have it. You know, I'm not one for riches and things like that. I'm not in a relationship. You know, I talk about that, you know, thinking, you know, one relationship to another and not being very good relationships. I really want to bring you right up to 2017, I'd finished working in as a counsellor. I'd gone to university, working as a counsellor in a treatment centre in Bournemouth. I'm in a relationship with one of the female counsellors, and now time to have the happy holiday, as my Bear would say. I'm still very good friends with Bear. We decided to travel around the world, and we ended up got a house in Spain and had the horses and all that stuff, but things just didn't work out. It wasn't what either of us anticipated. I kept clean, but I suppose when I went to Spain, I was of service for about a year, and then I dropped out. It was 22nd of December, 2017, and I was walking the dogs, and I was coming back to the stables. I used to walk about 3 miles in the morning, 3 miles in the afternoon. Come back to me when I was in the sales, and had this sharp pain in my chest. I went onto the floor and I just couldn't breathe. I couldn't catch my breath or anything. And the little dog that sat next to me now, Bori, he ran up and got Claire and ambulance, all that stuff, and basically found out that I had blood clots on my lungs. And changed my life, basically. I went from walking 6 miles a day plus, you know, chopping trees down and looking after the farm, to literally doing nothing overnight. And my brother came to see me, and one of the first things he said to me in the car when I picked him up at the airport was, I said, "You're as sick as fuck, Tony." I said, "Yeah, I am." I hadn't been doing what I needed to keep my recovery right. You know, I wasn't using, or all the different things were slipping in. I was getting angry, intolerant, all that stuff. And at that point, it was then when a friend of mine, or ours, with my brother's in recovery as well, gave me a telephone number of a person I spoke about earlier, Jim, who's my sponsor, and introduced me to Igna. I love him dearly, man. You know, I feel quite emotional at the moment. Because I remember Jim used to say to me, he said, "What time is it, Tane?" now time. It's now. Got to do it now. You're going to keep in the here and now. He helped me so much, man. It's like, and still helps me. And the one thing he's really helped me with was the ability to seek help regarding my historical section stuff. That therapy is still ongoing. And there's something, what I've come to realize is that for 20 odd years, I felt as if there was a black cloud over me, and I just had this typical British stiff upper lip, you know. Oh yeah, everything's going to be okay, but inside I was still very angry about things that had happened to me. But also that, you know, that learning forgiveness, you know, for forgiveness, praying for someone that's harmed you, that's really a miracle, really. Thinking that if you pray for someone that's harmed you, you get well. I believe I'm more healthy today than I ever been, have been in my recovery. And I don't mean that in the physical sense, just healthy in general. I think my head, heart, my gut instincts are sort of becoming more aligned. And I'm really okay about the person I am today. But it's been hard work. But, you know, I wasn't told in the early days it was going to be easy. Yeah. Recovery, you know, for me, has been the most important thing I've ever done in my life. To stop drinking and using and overcoming the obsessive compulsive behavior. You know, even the beginning to believe in a higher power. As I said earlier, I found that very, very difficult. And there's friends in the fellowship, specifically people in this meeting, that have helped me with that. Come to an understanding of this power there, and I pray to it on a daily basis. I'm disciplined. I get up in the morning. I do that stuff that keeps me clean on a daily basis. I get to meetings. To service, it's all really important stuff that keeps me clean, and it's not about me, it's about we as a fellowship. This brilliant fellowship that we call Narcotics Anonymous. So I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to share. I hope I ain't bored you to death. And big love and hugs to everyone. Thank you.